Good evening. I am TB, or actually Tiberio Kovac, but TB is the shorter form of it. Originally from Romania, I left Romania 20 years ago to find my luck in the neighboring country of Sweden, where I lived for 15 years. And I don't know about you, but 15 years for me was enough of cold, so I decided to move to warmer places, and that led me to move to Bermuda, where I, coded and programmed by the beach for like 1.5 years until some personal, some family issues made us move back to Romania, where we lived again for like 2 years. And then we realized that, we grew up. I don't know. We didn't like Romania anymore. We love the Romanians. But we, the stuff that are still happening in the country were not actually to our likings, and mainly the school system was not as good as it was when I grew up. So we decided to move again, and then we ended up moving in Tenerife. So some people ask me, do you speak Spanish? Not yet, but I will soon speak Spanish. I do speak Swedish. I don't speak Danish, so don't try, to ask questions in Danish, because I don't think I'll be able to understand what you have to say. During my time in Sweden, I worked as a developer, and about 12 years ago, I started to work as a trainer, training mostly on Microsoft technologies. And I actually lived the boom firsthand, first I was teaching like almost everything related to Microsoft technologies, including system administrations, database administrations, programming. And then the more stuff came out, the more I realized that actually I can't keep up with everything. So then I had to choose, then I had to pick, and then I ended up doing more and more developer training, because at heart I was a developer, and I'm still a developer. Actually, I refuse to call myself an architect. I refuse to call myself everything else. I'm still a developer. I'm still a programmer, and I hope you'll see that by how many mistakes I make when I'm doing the coding on screen. I do work as a developer. I was actually in a project until recently where I've done React.js. Go figure. Yay! actually, a lot of it with .NET in the back. And I really loved some of the stuff that they were there. I really, thought that some things were a little bit contrived, but still, that was my personal thing. Again, I do a lot of training. I do work as a mentor as well. I work in teams where I help them start their projects. I help them choose the right tool for the right job, and then I go and move on and maybe come from time to time and make sure that they are not doing, too many stupid things. I don't know why, but Microsoft made me a most valuable professional like 7 years ago, and what I get is actually to see the Microsoft team once a year in Redmond. I get a free MSDN subscription, which gives me access to all their software. And I think the best of it is access directly to the product group and very interesting discussions and stuff that you get to see what Microsoft has in the pipe. Someone asked about, you talked about disabling JavaScript, but what about Angular and what about React and stuff like that? I've seen last year a very nice presentation by a guy called Steve Sanderson. If any of you worked with Knockout.js, he's the guy that, started the whole Knockout.js. He was presenting what Microsoft is working on to actually create or to help with the server-side rendering of Angular 2 and React applications, which was a very interesting work that they were doing. So you get almost, all these kind of things that Chris was talking about earlier. You almost get the application functioning without even having JavaScript turned on. Of course, then the functionality that is necessary, like doing validation on the client and all the stuff will disappear because there is no code running, but most of the things will be actually there already, and the stuff that you would run on the client mainly for rendering will be possible to be done on the server side. Just as a parenthesis, because I remember the question. I'm a father. I have two daughters, 9 and 11 years old. And of course, I'm a geek, because otherwise I wouldn't be here talking about technology tonight. If you are on Twitter, you can find me as Tibor19. I think there is a Twitter user called CPHFront for tonight. So if you add that as well, they'll be able to track and see exactly you know, what you disagree with me on. Before we start talking about it, let me tell you a little bit of the agenda for tonight, a history lesson. Of course, we want to know why are we here, you know, or how did we get in this place. I won't talk about the history of JavaScript, don't get me wrong, I'll talk about the history of Angular only. And as Christian mentioned earlier, there is actually a very interesting article going, you know, like Twitter, Facebook, wherever you look, it says, what does it take to become a JavaScript programmer in 2016? Look for it, it's a very interesting article, and it's so painfully, you know, true in many respects that you won't believe, you know, you won't believe it. Then we are looking at the quick start guide. This is a quick introduction. I will try to answer questions. If you already worked with Angular or Angular 2, by the way, it would be an interesting exercise to see. How many of you work with Angular 1 today? Oh, almost, okay, a lot of people. How many of you work with Angular 2? Very few. How many of you have looked at it? How many of you liked it? Okay, now we're getting somewhere. So fewer and fewer people, you know, with the hands up. But that's expected. To be honest, I didn't like it when I saw it first time. So I don't think you are alone. So I will take the quick start guide, and I will actually try to explain exactly what's there, because I have the firm belief that if you understand what's happening, it makes it much easier for you then to continue to work with it and then to look for the information and then be able to build it. I did exactly the same presentation yesterday, and I told people that I'm using three monitors whenever I'm doing development. In one, I'm doing the, you know, whatever coding I need to do. In the other one, I'm seeing all the updates, you know, and all the things that I need to see. And in the third one, I have Stack Overflow, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do my job. So, you know, that's where we are right now. At the moment, we need three. Sometimes I feel the need that the fourth one wouldn't be that bad, you know, when you have a long debugging session that you really want to see the result in one, the debugging in the other, and so on. But I can do with three, you know, I can hide the Stack Overflow and show my debugging window on that third monitor. So after that, I will go and talk a little bit more about the modules, about the components inside Angular application, about services, and some of the out-of-the-box stuff that you can start using them already. We have 1 hour. Let's see how much we manage to do. I love the sound of my voice, but that doesn't mean you don't get to interrupt me to ask questions. So please feel free and do so whenever you feel like something is good to know. So, the history lesson now. Angular first appeared in 2009. A guy called Mishko, he was working for Google, and they needed something like a, you know, like the kind of framework that would fit in one, you know, that would make an application to fit in one single page and help with a lot of, you know, JavaScript and all the dynamic stuff that you want in a client-side application. What it ended up being, it was a nice way to augment HTML. I still believe that Angular 1 done right can be a very powerful framework, because when you create your own directives, then you actually create a very powerful language. You have a declarative way of telling what your application is doing. Most of the time when a designer is looking at your application, he doesn't really care about the JavaScript. He doesn't really care about, you know, about the HTML. Although he would manipulate something that resembles HTML, it will care about the semantic and what your application has to do. What Angular did, it opened the possibility for us to do a declarative way programming, to work in a declarative way with the programs. And I used to, you know, I jokingly used to explain the difference between imperative and declarative programming by using an example of my wife sending me to buy milk. So in an imperative way, she would say something like, you know, go in the hallway, take your shoes, and then go outside, take the elevator, and then go out, and then turn right, go 200 meters, enter the store, you know, go there back, pick up a box of milk, and then, you know, go out, and then turn left, and then go, turn left again, take the elevator, come, go to the refrigerator, and put the milk in there. Now, that's my wife, you know, she likes to talk a lot, that's not a problem, but There is one other problem for me. You know, I start losing my patience already after 2-3 sentences because I still don't know what I have to do. You know, that's what imperative programming does. The meaning, it's most of the time, it's buried deep inside. In a declarative way, you know, she would have just come to me and say, you need to go buy milk. And then all the implementation details are up to me. And then when in the, so what that means at the end of the day, when you do a declarative programming, you just have to, you know, talk about the stuff, show the intent of the things you need to do. And then it's, you know, the programmer behind will actually do the programming, will do the coding. But the designer then when it comes can take all those meanings and all those stuff and make them look nice and make them work correctly and make your application actually meaningful. You can even start talking and resonate about your HTML with a business analyst, you know, with someone that has no idea about the stuff, but because he can understand the, you know, the things that you put there, makes it much easier. So that was the, for me, I think that was the biggest power of Angular that they brought, you know, and that they made it possible. Then of course they realized that there are a lot of things that were, you know, although in, you know, in spite of all their goodwill and all their good thinking from the very beginning, they realized that their approach was not the best one. Let me put it this way. They realized that there are a lot of things that do not make sense. You get a lot of problems with Angular 1 because some people do not understand how certain things work. I don't want to go into details, but I've seen them, you know, I've seen the errors, I've seen the problems, I worked with them, I made them myself, you know, I made those errors and those problems. So of course they said, we need to go back to the design board and then we need to do that. And of course what they said, in 2014, they started all those discussions at the beginning of the year. About 2 years ago in Paris, they announced, oh, Angular, you know, Angular 1 is dead, long live Angular 2. That was the message. Everybody left from there and they were very, very upset because they said, okay, so we invested time and money and then we did a lot of things, you know, to, in order to be able to adopt this, this technology. And then you are not, you know, you are not helping us. You say that this is dead now. And what do we do? How do we go back? Especially when you get so much enterprise adoption, because that's one, it's one of the biggest problems. If you have a, you know, a startup or a small shop, it doesn't matter. But when the enterprise start talking about that, when the big money, you know, and the big guns come into play, then that's when you have a problem. So, of course, a lot of people get upset and of course they were waiting and they didn't understand exactly what's happening. So, yeah, you do that, forget it. You do factories, we don't have factories. You do that, controllers, we don't have controllers. You do this, we don't have this, and so on. So they just keep, you know, telling you, we are, this is not what we are doing. I start working with Angular 2 and with actually with people from the Angular 2 team sometimes. About October last year, I think the version was Alpha 45 or something when I start looking at Angular 2. And let me tell you about my frustration. So Angular and Angular 2 sound awful a lot like, you know. Actually, the only difference between them, it's a 2 in the number, you know, especially from a search engine point of view. So there is no documentation. There is something, you know, written in a quite convoluted way, you know. It's like someone tries to make a computer science thesis, you know, and I think the outcome should be how few people can understand the, you know, the code that they are writing. Like, that was the feeling I got whenever I start to look into that, all kind of obscure things that they were using. It was quite hard to actually make sense or at least to find a decent information. How can I do X that was so simple in Angular 1 or so simple in any other framework? How can I do X in Angular 2? It was impossible to find. And one of the biggest, you know, complaints that we had, you know, as developer community at the beginning towards Google was exactly this. How can we find the information? If you as a, you know, as a search giant do not understand the meaning of a search term, you know, and then you replicate it just to represent two different things, how do you expect us to find the right information? So they've done a lot of bad things, but finally, I think last month, they come and then they released the Angular 2. And I was surprised, you know, I still looked at it, I still worked with it in some smaller projects, and I've seen the evolution, and incredibly, but it cleaned out nicely. You know, it looks actually pretty good at the moment. One of the things they've done, and I think they've done right, they chose to use TypeScript. The choice of you know, of developer of development tools for them is Visual Studio Code. I don't know if any of you is familiar with those two terms, but both of them are coming from a company called Microsoft. And they were, you know, when you think about Microsoft and Google in the same sentence, you know, there is only one word missing, it's war, which actually it's not true. So last year in November, I've been in Redmond, you know, this annual visit where Microsoft invites us from all over the world to present us what they have in, you know, in pipe. They put us in those big rooms, closed doors, only people that sign non-disclosure agreements, so you are not supposed to talk about anything that you see at here there. And guess who was one of the main speakers? Brad Green. Does the name ring the bell? He's the program manager for Angular. So he was one of the guys invited in the room, and he was actually even talking to us and give us a speech. And then he was there recruiting, you know, people to be developer evangelists like we are for Microsoft. He said, you know, if you worked with that, you might do the same stuff for Google. And that was actually by Microsoft's invitation. I think that, you know, there is a very interesting time ahead. I think the introduction and the history lesson was long enough that, you know, almost bored half of the audience, which makes me want to go to the next step. So one of the things actually we said that I'm going to talk about the quick start guide. Let me show you the quick start guide actually, which is here. So if you go to angular.io.js, what you get, can you see it? The code, is it? I think I need to change the font size. References, workspace, font size. Yeah, sorry, yeah. Yeah, they always have the same issue. The days actually 16. Okay, so better now? Okay. So if you go on Angular.io and you start looking at you know what, quick start guide, they will tell you, okay, you need to do this, you need to copy this, you need to copy that, and you need to put them all together. It's exactly what I've done here. I followed that the 5 minutes quick guide with, you know, with the typos that you normally do, but at the end of the day I actually made everything working. It took me exactly 5 minutes like they said. And it's the, you know, it is an Angular 2 application in its simplest form. So what we have here, it's the normal index.html. What we do in the index.html, the first thing is actually to specify that we need to load some polyfills. The reason we need to load some polyfills is because not all browsers are born equal. You know, some of them are more equal than the other. And then, you know, we are using can I use to try to understand what can we use in one browser and what cannot we use. But there are functionalities that Angular is dependent on. And in order to be able to make, to bring that functionality or to bring that, you know, that functionality to the specific browser, that's where we start using the polyfills, you know, and add the functionality so it is available. What the polyfills do, they look, is that that functionality in the browser? Yes, then don't do it. If not, just add the function to the particular, you know, to the particular class inside JavaScript so you have it and you can use it. Which makes it quite easy, you know, quite easy for them then to do the job without thinking on which browser am I at the moment. And then after they load this, the next thing that they are doing, they are loading the system.js. System.js, it's actually a module handler. How can you modularize your JavaScript application and how can they make sure that they load stuff only once and then they have the dependency in there. Then they configure System.js in order to understand exactly what it has to do. And then they start the application. There is no mention of Angular whatsoever in this part of the, in this file, because everything that has to do with Angular, it's pure JavaScript and it's actually part of the configure of the System.js config.js file. So that's where you get all the information. So this is just as any, you know, other JavaScript, you know, inside an HTML that you would do. Then we have the body, and then we have one element here called myApp that contains the loading. So myApp is something, again, going back to what I said earlier, we can augment HTML. And in this case, we augment HTML by creating our own element, our own HTML tag called myApp. And inside it, it's loading. As Chris mentioned earlier, with the, you know, with the how the browser are implemented, if they find something like this and they don't understand what's happening, they will just, you know, put on the screen the loading with, you know, they will consider, oh, you meant a div, you meant a span, you meant to be, it's a browser, you know, it's a browser thing at the end of the day, what will be displayed, but you will get the loading message until, you know, Angular is up and running. Now, configuration wise, if we go here, what we configure System.js and say, you know what, let's have some path information. Whenever you would see inside my, you know, inside my configuration file that I use stuff like npm colon, please look into the node modules folder. So it's just a alias for me to be able to have lesser code on, or, you know, less or shorter path inside the files. Then I'm creating a map. Whenever I'm using a name inside my file to import something, I'm actually, I prefer to use some short name. So I say, if someone says that wants to use Angular Core, please go ahead and load this file. Or actually first look if the file is already loaded. If not, then load this file for me. So how many of you have worked with JavaScript more than 4 years? Let's see. Okay. So how many of you have had the problem that you put the, you know, the JavaScript files in wrong order and stuff do not work? So yeah, everybody. At least with this one, when you have a dependency, you can specify the dependency and then it will be loaded in the right order. Then the next thing we are saying is, you know, we load common, we load, so all the stuff that actually, if someone needs any of those libraries or any functionality from those files, this is where you would find that particular file. We are using reactive extensions, ericsjs. It's used by Angular actually to handle the HTTP traffic, and not only that, for more other stuff. And then for this particular application, there is an in-memory web API. So instead of me having somewhere a backend, I can use this in-memory web API to do stuff like post, put, delete, so not only get, so not, you know, so I'll be able to simulate a fully functioning application without having a database behind. And then I'm configuring some of the packages. So I have a package called app. By default, it looks for a file called index.js in every folder. If it doesn't find that, you know, I need to specify what's the entry point. So I would say, in my case, the entry point is main.js. And then default extension for files to look for, it's a JS file. For Redis.js, the same thing. For the in-memory web API, it's the same thing. I won't use those two, but they are here because they were part of the quick start guide. Now, next step is to actually start the application. So when we go back here, we say we see that someone says system.import app. When you say system.import app, what happens actually is that dynamically I'm loading the app, whatever app package is that one. And if we go back, my app package is the, it's in fact, my app package is the main.js file inside the app folder. Okay, so that's what I'm doing, but I don't have a JS file, I have a TS file. Now, Angular team decided to use TypeScript for development in their applications. And the reason they decided to use TypeScript is because TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript, and it's not killed in a design by committee manner. I have actually, you know, one company behind, again, Microsoft. And Microsoft does a very good job at, you know, at actually implementing and listening to the developers. Most of the stuff that you will see today in ES 2015, ES 2016, were actually first tested in TypeScript, and Microsoft proved that, you know, there is a need for it, and there are people that are actually using it, so they could start using it as well. So I think they've done a pretty decent job in that one. Now TypeScript, it's a different language than JavaScript. It's a superset, and it adds actually type safety as well. And again, in a big JavaScript application, you have big problems. You know, the bigger the application, the bigger the problems, especially when you talk about names and when you can override values and so on. So stuff can become actually pretty cumbersome. So TypeScript eases that pain a lot, you know, especially if you have several developers. They don't understand, okay, what kind of data do you expect in certain places. So having the, you know, having the type safety, a strongly typed definition of those, you know, of in those files makes everything much easier for everyone. So let's start here. The very first line says import platform browser dynamic from Angular platform browser dynamic file. Again, if I would go back to system.js config.js file, you would see exactly from which JS file I'm looking for that particular functionality. Now, if you go in there, platform browser dynamic is actually a function that's exported. So in TypeScript, you have the notion of import and export. Exported means that whatever I have in this file, I want to make it available or I want to make it visible outside. Again, in JavaScript prior to ES 2015, there was no notion of modules. So whenever you put something inside a file, it's visible, you know, into the global. Whenever you make a definition of a variable or a function or whatever, it's automatically added to the global scope. Globals are evil, but that was how, you know, that's what you get when you design a language in 6 days, or seven, actually. He was not as good as God. He did it in 7 days. So when he, when you get into these kind of situations, you need to find a solution. So one of the solutions was to actually create this self or immediately invoked functions and execute immediately, EFIs, whatever. When you create actually a function and then you execute it immediately, but because you define all the variables and all the dependencies inside the function, you are actually basing your, you know, your definitions on the side effect of function executions, not of the fact that they would be part of the global context or of the global object or of the window object, actually, to be more precise. So when you talk about modules and import and export, that's what happens behind the curtains. Whatever I'm putting inside a file nowadays in ES 2015, it's considered private. If you look at the code that gets generated, for instance, from ES 2015 to ES 5, you will see that it's a function that gets automatically invoked. So it's nothing fancy. It's just a simpler way for us to do the coding. It's call it, you know, syntactic sugaring if you want. Now, if you want something to be visible outside, you would adorn it with export. When you say export of an element, then someone else might be able to come and say, I want to import this. It means, okay, I want to bring that value or that variable, that function, I want to bring it in the current scope and be able to work with it. So going back now, I'm saying this is my browser dynamic and this is my module that I want to import from a file called app module, which is in my current folder. Again, I'm not putting any .js or anything on the file names, and that's because I specify my default extension to be JS. So I'm just saving keystrokes. It's nothing, you know, it's nothing different, just less keystrokes here. I create an object, you know, from this platform browser dynamic, and then I will say, please bootstrap my application using this app module. App module, it's an Angular module. Angular module, it's not the same thing as a TypeScript module, but they call it module. It's actually, if you think about it, it's more like an Angular 1 module, where you want to put stuff, you know, you want to group them into the same, under the same umbrella, and you want to make sure that when you export something, everything would be exported together. When you want to work with, you know, with different functionality, or if you want to reuse parts of your application, you do it in one scoop. So, as I said, TypeScript is the same as a JavaScript, which is effectively a scope. Whenever you define a module, which is a file, it means that you want to make your variables or your functions or your classes visible only inside that particular file. In Angular, it's my way to organize the application into a cohesive block of functionality. Okay? When you look into a module, you have stuff like imports, because the module is dependent on other modules. In Angular 1, you do stuff like angular.module and then module name and then an array of modules that you want to make, you know, to have a dependency on. Or an empty array if you don't want to have a dependency on, because otherwise it means that you want to get the module block, which you'll never get because you never created in the first place, and so on and so on and so on. You know what I'm talking about, or? So that's the import. That means those are the other modules that I have a dependency on and I want to bring up into my current module. Providers. providers will start to make sense when we talk about dependency injections. When you want to create a, when you want to have dependency injection, you can create it at different levels. You can create it at a component level, you can create it at a service level, you can create it at a module level, meaning that everybody in that module will get access to the same object. We'll get back to it when we come to services. Next one would be declarations. Declarations, it means what modules, what classes that I already have, or components or pipes or directives that I've defined inside my code, I want to make part of this module. So those are my declarations. Just because they are part of this module, it doesn't mean they are visible. So if I want to make them available outside, then I would specify them in my exports. And then Bootstrap is actually which is the main class of that module. When you load this module, which class should I actually use as a first instance? So now if we go back to this one and we look, we can see that in our app module, we are importing the browser module. Browser module brings us a lot of, you know, like all the data binding functionality that we need and makes our application work with the DOM. Then we have the declarations. Here is when I specify, you know what, this is the app component will be part of this module. And then I have a Bootstrap. Because this is my entry point, I don't need to export app component. But if I would use, if I would reuse this module inside other module, then I would need to export app component or the stuff that I want to have exported from this one. Where do I get app component from? I get it from the file called app component. If I go to app component.js, now I have my component. And by the way, let me go back here. One thing that might be strange, it's this line here. How many of you do not know what this line means? Okay, good. How many of you know what an attribute is in C sharp? Okay, or meta programming or metadata or yeah. Okay, so what this is, it's actually, it's a decorator. It's called a decorator, but it's, you know, in C sharp would be called a an attribute. In Java, I think it's called a meta attribute or annotation. Yes, it's called an annotation. It's exactly that. What I'm doing here, my app module has its own functionality. It's a class at the end of the day. I can add whatever functionality I want in it. But there are some stuff that are actually not part of it, like app component. It shouldn't be, you know, declared in a way inside my app module. But I want to be able to combine everything together. And the way to do that is by using this data annotation. If you look at this data annotation, at this attribute, at the end of the day, it's nothing more than a function. That's what it is, a function that takes as the first parameter this class. So the definition of this class. And what it does inside, it adds all those things that you see here, it adds them as definitions, as static variables, or invoking static functions inside that particular, or with that particular class. Meaning that we'll do the registration of the module, we do a lot of the things. So instead of me explicitly having to go and say every single time, app.controller.whatever, or app.service.whatever, in order to make it, you know, registered, I'm just specifying them here in a declarative way. Again, I'm specifying the dependencies, that would have been app module, you know, and the right parentheses. Then I'm specifying, you know, every single component or every single directive that I want to expose from it. That would have been, you know, module dot directive and so on. It's exactly the same thing. So are the kind of attributes, you know, that have nothing to do with the implementation at the end of the day, with the functionality of it. And because Angular 2 knows about them, it's very easy for Angular to bootstrap and create the modules the way it needs to be, the way they need to be created. So now we have the very first component. Our component, again, in order to get access to the component, we need to import it from somewhere. We import it from Angular Core. And then we specify that we have a component here. And then again, the component, it's nothing more than a decorator. It annotates our class, the app component class, and specifies some of the attributes. One of them is a selector. Selector, it's a CSS selector. It means how would I, you know, if I'm looking inside an HTML file, what should I see in order to be able to, you know, to make sure that is this component you're talking about? Or maybe the other way around. when you load a file, an HTML, when we load the HTML file and when we start Angular, actually by calling the platform dynamic, you know, invoking the platform browser dynamic function, what it does, it goes to the, you know, it goes to our HTML file and it starts parsing it. And then, you know, whenever it parses it, when it doesn't find something that is HTML, it looks in its own list of definitions. So one of them would be, oh, I have a selector, that's my app. So what do I do with it? I would actually create an instance of this class app component, which is a component, and I would, you know, generate maybe an HTML, and then I insert that HTML inside the end result. So whenever someone says, or whenever someone sees this my app, what I'm actually ending up doing is rendering this template. This is pure HTML. So it's my first Angular application. Of course, now if I want to look at it, I need to run it. And the way to run it is to open the command control prompt and then run npm start. When npm start, it would actually invoke the TypeScript compiler to generate JavaScript files out of my TypeScript files. And then it will start again the TypeScript compiler in watch mode. The reason it starts it in watch mode is because every time I make a change, I want to make sure that I'm, let me see. No, I want to do it that way. Here, like this. So every time I do a change inside the file, I want my application to get recompiled, and then I want to be automatically reloaded. So if I say here, my third app, because yesterday I've done the second app, so now this one would be my third app. This is the third Angular app, okay? So it does this automatically. Maybe sometimes you don't want this automatic reloading, then you can change the way, you know, Light Server works. But most of the time you like this. I wouldn't use, for instance, stuff like that if I have a big application and I, you know, it has to re-render everything because I lose all the state and I need to run through a lot of other things. There are stuff like in React, for instance, they have partial renderings and stuff. They do, there were hot replacing, actually, it's called. Angular 2 works on a similar solution for Angular for them. So we will have hot replacements as well in Angular soon enough. Okay, so this is actually now the component that we are working with, and then it looks like this. Now we can do more things because this is a class, you know, this is you know, let's say an enhanced JavaScript class. It's nothing. If you take it like this, I think you would be just fine. I can start defining stuff like this. That I would say this is of type string. So I can define a field inside my class, or I can actually allow the compiler to infer the type based on the data that I'm initializing with. So I would say TB. Then I can go with this one and I can use it inside my template. Of course, if I press enter here, now I get an error because I'm having a multi-line string, and that's not something that's allowed by default in JavaScript or in ES5. But ES6 comes actually with multi-line strings, which are actually backticks like that. So I can use it this way. Let me put that, and let me go here and say I have a div, and then my div will use the data. So I would say hello, I want to use the data information, so I will do that, and then I would say div as well. Okay, let me save this, and then I get hello TB right under. Okay, meaning that it works. This is actually a one-way data binding. The kind of one-way data binding. So whatever I'm putting in there, it's evaluating the data, and it just actually calls data.toString in order to show the information. So if I would have put an object here, it would have shown me something like object or whatever. So if I do something like this, an object that contains, let's do this, name TB, it will show me that this is an object. Okay? So just to prove that it calls actually to string. Okay, so I can do that. That's, you know, everyone can do that. So it's nothing fancy here. Let's try and do something more. Let's try and actually put some data, you know, like you work with data. input type text, and then I need to actually set the value. So the way you do that is by using the one-way data binding from source to the screen. Okay, so that's the value. The value should take its, you know, its content from my data variable. Okay, so now I have an input, and then this input is actually containing the value TB. In theory, now if I would start writing something here, I would expect the data to be updated. That's what, you know, what you normally get when you have the two-way data binding. Now, again, Angular team decided, one of the early decisions they made when they started doing that was to not offer two-way data binding. I don't know how many of you were upset about it. I think, you know, one of my biggest problems always with programming was exactly this. How do I do the reading from field and then putting it back on the screen? That was one of the things that was always, you know, problematic. So when WPF came out and I could do the data binding, that was actually a very, very powerful thing that I could do inside my application, because I didn't have to do all those, you know, back and forth kind of things. So they say no. You know, because we did that in Angular 1, we had a big problems with all the parsing and with all the digest cycles and all the problems, you know, that we're bringing after that. So we want to avoid these kind of issues, and we know it's not performant enough. So what I said is, if you want to read something, you have to be explicit about it. So what I have to do now is go back here and say, oh, so do you want me to react to something? Then I have to put, you know, to subscribe to an event. Input now, it's an event. If I put it in, you know, in a parenthesis, it means that I want to subscribe to it, and I subscribe to it specifying a method. I can specify a method name, or I can do the stuff directly in line. I could say stuff like data equals dollar event dot target dot value. So I'm just reading, it's actually target, not target, because I'm sure it won't work. Stack Overflow would have helped here too. So target.value, I would save the thing, and let's see if now it's working. If I put now strings here, it works. Ta-da! But this is ugly. Think about the field, you know, especially if you work in an, you know, in an enterprise environment and you have a so-called line of business application, and a business analyst came to you and said, we need 200 fields for reading the data, you know, for the user to input the data. I think all of us have, you know, at some point in our life have found those 200 fields forms in some obscure places that we had to fill. And it's like, who was the guy thinking about it, and what was he thinking about it? I don't know. So when you get into a such situation, this is not really feasible. So what they decided was to offer us something else. Like, okay, I can give you a combination of the two. But giving you a combination of the two would have been something like, oh, I want now the value to subscribe to it, but you are not, a value is not an event. It's not a, you know, it's not an HTML event. It doesn't know about it, so it doesn't know what to do. So they decided to introduce something called ngModel. So ngModel, of course, we want one way and, you know, from source, and we want another way back to source. Now, was always a problem at the beginning, because people were always having a problem. Do I put the, you know, the right parentheses outside or the inside? What's the right order? So every time we had the same issue. So now, in order to remember that this is called the banana in a box. You know, it's seriously, I kid you not, it's called the banana in a box, and you'll hear it many times. But if you, you know, so if you know that whenever you want to do a, let's call it a two-way data binding, you have to use the banana in a box, then you are safe. Then it's good. Okay? So let's do the ngModel. ngModel, and then of course I want the ngModel to be connected to the data. I would remove that here, and then I will do the input data event target value like this. Okay. And if I press save now, let me show you something. I use F12, so now this is, you know, this is when my third monitor would have been very handy, but unfortunately I don't have it. So this is my console. Let me show you here. I just want to show you how I crash and burn when I save this one. And the reason I crash and burn is because it comes here and says, oh, I have an error while trying to parse your thing. I cannot bind to ng-model because it's not a known property of the input. Now, I told you at the beginning that there are some stuff that I'm getting from the browser module, but browser module gives me only the not necessary functionality to be able to start, you know, to create the simple data binding things, not the ng-model. ng-model is part of another module, so I need to bring it. That module, in order to bring it as part of my application, I need to import it, and I import it in the app module TS. First, I would say import forms module, and then I will import it from Angular. And by the way, if you don't like this with at in front, I sometimes I feel it's a bit too, I don't know, too flaky. You can go inside the config.js file, systemjs.config.js file, and change the at sign, you know, remove it from all of them, and it works as good. So it's just a, you know, it's just a convention. But, you know, because the Angular team uses it, I think everybody will expect to see it, and everybody, maybe they, you know, they form their hands just adding at Angular. So you might have this problem. And because I import it inside the file, it doesn't mean it will be visible inside my, you know, inside my module. It's just visible inside this, you know, this particular file. So to make it available to my module, I have to include it as well here. So I would say forms module now here, and then save it again. It will do a refresh, and now it will tell me Angular 2 is running in development mode. By the way, call enable prod if you want to move it in production. So if I do this, now works again. Now, those are the components. We talked about modules. Now let's move on and talk about services. So one thing we need to talk, when you talk about Angular 1, you had, you know, your constants, you had your values, you had your services, you had your factories, you had your providers, you had your service factory providers, so which were constants, you know, with some values, and so on and so on and so on. Now there is only one of them, and it's actually, it's not even called a service, it's a class. You know, whatever class you create, it can be used as a service. And they have created a very powerful dependency injection model for those services. So let me go back here now, and let's add our very first service here, which I will call app.service. Very, very resourceful. You know that naming is the hardest thing you can do as a programmer. So yeah. Now I would need to create a class. I would say export class, and my class would be called app.service. Go figure. And then I would have a method called getName, because I really don't want to hard code TB as a name inside of, you know, inside my my component. I want this to be returned from here, return, and then I would return something like from service, so I can show it's actually coming from somewhere else. I will return TB. Okay, so now I have the service. In order to be able to use the service, I need to import it where I will use it. So I'm using it here. Let's say import app service from, and it's in my current folder, app.service, like this. And now I want to use it. Well, I could do something like, let me put it here and say I want a constructor. So I can do it like here. Come on. And I could say data, or maybe even like this. I could say SVC equals new app service. And then data, actually, this dot data. So one of the things TypeScript does, it does not implicitly scope to this. meaning that if you put the name of a variable and if it's not declared in the local scope, it will tell you, I don't know who data is. So you would need to add the this.data in front of it in order to fully qualify it. So this from data, it's equal svc.getName. And then if we save and run, we will see that it says hello from service DB. It works, but now it's a problem. You don't do stuff like that. You don't create instances of another service inside the constructor. You should inject them, because if you want testability, you want to be able to abstract this this kind of functionality. So how do we do the injection? Well, one simple way would be to do this. Control X, Control V, and not newing it up. And removing that here, I think it should add a parenthesis. But if I just put it like this, the problem would be that it doesn't know where to get this app service from. Now I'm not injecting it, I'm not explaining anything. Just because I have a class called like this, it doesn't know anything about it. So I need to specify a way how to create that. And the simplest way to do that is actually to specify inside my inside my component, I can specify a list of providers. And the providers that I need to use are actually defined as an array, and I would have app service, it's one of the providers. Because I'm just specifying the name like this, it will know automatically, if someone is looking for an instance of an app service, if I don't have it already, I will create one by newing it up. So it will just create a new instance exactly like I did. But now, I can actually send that from someone else, from somewhere else. I don't have it, you know, hardly created in my constructor. So again, if I now save the application, everything should be back to normal and I will get my data from my service, which makes it again very nice. Now there is another problem here. I don't know if any of you have spotted it, but when I like this, you mean? Yeah, it's nothing changed. It's just that I return the string from another. I override this string that's in data. I override it with the results from this method. So nothing happens. But going back here, what I don't like in all this is the fact that I call a method. I called an external service inside a constructor. And again, this is not something that is recommended. So one way to alleviate this problem is to use the lifecycle hooks. So a component has different, you know, different lifecycle events. There is a, you know, a popular framework called ASP.NET, and they use something like that, and they got a lot of shit for it, you know, from a lot of people. But now apparently it's very good when you use it. So one of the, you know, you have an init, you have load, you have destroy. So there are different lifecycle hooks available for a component. So I can say, you know what, I want to use some of those. And the way to do that is just to create a method ng on init, and because it's JavaScript, it's just that the method exists, and then automatically, you know, Angular will just look, did you define the method? Yes. Oh, then I would call it on the on init. Of course, if I want to be politically correct, I would do the implements here. So I would add the implementation, and I would say I want you to use the on init interface. On init interface is actually just it. It's a, you know, it's a way for me to force someone that, you know, that wants to implement it to create the right methods as part of this. So if I comment this one out, it will tell me app component does not implement ng on init method. So of course, if I put it back, then it will tell me, oh, I have ng on init here. So then everything is okay again. So instead of calling this, you know, inside a constructor, I will call that in the on init method because that makes more sense. So I will do this and I will put it here. Now, of course, SVC is not part of my current function anymore. I need to declare it at a class level. Luckily, I have in TypeScript the possibility to say this dot underscore to add a private in front of a, you know, of a parameter, or a public or protected in front of a parameter that I send inside a constructor. And what happens behind the curtains, it's creating, you know, the underscore SVC of the type app service, and then it does the, you know, the, here it will say something like this dot underscore SVC equals underscore SVC. So it does that for me. It's just, again, syntactic sugaring. I don't need to do it by hand. So again, if I'm saving now, you will see that the result should be actually exactly the same. There shouldn't be any difference in that. Yes? Sorry? Which one? The underscore? No. It's just a, so I'm coming from C sharp, you know, so I have even before that I did a lot of Java, and before that I did C++ and C and assembler, and somehow underscore got us, you know, it's under my fingernails. I can get rid of it, you know. I like to name my private fields, or actually the fields inside the class, I like to name them to name them with an underscore in front of them, because that shows what I'm using them for. Data is an exception, because data, it's a public field, although not putting anything there, it makes it private, but because I'm using it outside my class, inside the template, you know, I would rather use data dot something instead of using underscore data inside my HTML. Make sense? It's a bit of convoluted thinking, yeah? But I don't know, it makes sense for me. Okay? No, but yeah, so, but the underscore is not necessary. Okay. Now, of course, this is a boring thing. I don't really want to do that. One thing that I, you know, hate is a strong word, so I will use it. I hate about React, it's the fact that we have to mix HTML and JavaScript. And of course, there will be thousands of people telling you, no, that's not what it is. This is JSX we're talking about. No, that's actually HTML and JavaScript. So let's call it what it is. Just giving it a new name, it doesn't make it different. I worked with it. I like React, but I still don't like the fact, you know, that you have to use that. There are some solutions to create templates and actually separate that. And I really liked the separation between HTML and JavaScript. Just because Facebook does it, it doesn't make it any better. So, of course, now, Angular does it too, you know, so I have to mix HTML and JavaScript. And the problem is that I have no way of knowing when I'm doing something wrong in here. So how can we solve this? Well, the simplest way is to change this template to a template URL, this to a name of the file. So that would be app.component.html. Let's do that. Remove this, and of course then I can create a new file called app.component.html and add this here and save it, and voila. I think it's a bit better, you know, at least I have a, you know, I have, oh no, actually it's no voila because I didn't save. So it's no voila, and I'll get an error. So why do I get an error? Because there is a peculiarity. When I specify the name here, I need to specify the full path from the root of the application. I can't use relative paths, at least not yet. What I need to do, I need to change something in here. So what I will need to do is to say, oh, by the way, this is a module. That is actually module.idea. And it might be, so that I'm wrong, it should be module name, I think. Is it module name? Yes. No? Sorry? Let me see. No. Oh, it should be module. If I save it. No. So. Oh no, it's module ID, sorry. Like this. They changed it. Yeah. So when I say module ID equals module ID, it knows automatically, or it knows that whenever I specify the name of a component like this, it will know to look inside that particular file. Another thing actually I can do here, which is very nice, is using something like styles. style URLs, actually URLs, style URLs, and then I would have something like this app.component.css. Component, that's the one, component.css. I can save it. Of course, I'll get an error because I have no app components.css, but I can create one and I can say div, you know, color red. Bingo. Yes, the question was, does that CSS apply only to that particular component? Yes, so that's a, you know, that has a local scope. So whatever I want to change in it, it won't, you know, if I put another div in another component, that won't be influenced by this value. It actually does a lot of decoration. It adds out component that name underscore, so it creates a stupid, let me see. At least that's how it looked at the beginning. Maybe they decided it's too stupid and they went back, but no, div ng context value exe blah blah blah. So yeah, oh god, I know. I know. So yeah, that's how they do it. But it's actually, now if you don't want local, you can actually still use global div. It's not you know, but I think that's the best they could come up with so far. And again, now it's possible for me to say only app component.css because I specify module ID, module.id. So I don't have to specify the full path. Now, one more thing I want to show you while coding here, actually, yeah, let's do that, is that my app service wants to use another service. Namely, I want to use the HTTP service. So of course, if I want to use the HTTP service, I need to import it. I need to get the HTTP module and import it inside my module. So again, going back here and doing something like import HTTP module, that brings the functionality related to it inside my current file, and say from at Angular slash HTTP. And then we add the list of the dependencies, HTTP module. Going back here, nothing has changed yet. Now I need to inject the service. So what I would have to say, exactly like I did before, I would say a constructor. And then the constructor will have a private underscore HTTP of the type HTTP. Of course, it doesn't know who HTTP is, and in order to know who is HTTP is, I need to do what? I need to import it. You know what? Pressing wrong buttons here. Sorry. So I'll do import HTTP from the same Angular at HTTP. Saving that. Now, when it loads, it will give me an error telling me that my app service has some unsolved issues, some unsolved dependencies, meaning that it doesn't know how to find HTTP, the definition of the HTTP service. By default, services are living in isolation. So whenever you get something inside the dependency injection, it won't try to do any, you know, anything to it. So the way to solve that is to add an attribute in front of the service, or actually a decorator called injectable. So I have to do something like this, import injectable from Angular slash core. And then I do here at injectable like this. So I'm adding this in front of it. Because I put injectable in front of the class name, it doesn't mean that the service is injectable. It means that the service would actually have dependencies that should be taken from the dependency injection container. Now, I want to add one more thing before I finish this discussion. Dependency injection is hierarchic. So the way it works, whenever you specify a service into a component, it looks in the current component. If the current component has a list of providers, then it means that it can create an instance of that. If this one was not already created, it will create a, you know, a new instance, and that would be a singleton. Now, it will go up the chain until it finds one. If it doesn't find one, you know, eventually should find one in the root module provider, and it will create, you know, it will create one at that level, meaning that the module will be available for everyone inside that application. Actually, it will go all the way up to the bootstrapper, because the inside the bootstrapper, when you bootstrap the module, you can specify as well which services you want to make part of the dependency injection container. Then the next part is, now, if I have two siblings, actually, you know, and each and every one of them have a provider defined, that's the same service, they will create two instances. So then you'll have two singletons. Sounds very, very interesting, doesn't it? But two singletons, it means actually you have one here on this branch and one here on that branch. They have nothing in common. If you really need only one instance, you need to move it up. Or actually, if you it's a real singleton, you need to define it at the main level or at the application. Now, of course, if we have HTTP now here, we can call it, we can do something with it and so on like we did before. So it's nothing, you know, it's nothing, nothing more to it. Now, because I already passed, you know, I went 10 minutes past my, you know, my initial promise time, and I can still talk for another hour or two on, you know, that. But I don't think you want to hear more from me. I will show you a little bit how the ready application looks like, you know, or not ready, whatever I wanted to show you tonight, what I added more. So the app service, the get name here is actually calling a file data.json, which is this one, which just contains simple text saying from the HTTP TB. Let me go back. Where is it? App service. So it says, please get this data by using the HTTP service. This returns an observable. Observable comes from RxJS. Observable in itself, it's at least a 1 week subject to talk about. It's a very broad subject. There are a lot of things, but think about observable as the opposite of enumerable. So in an enumerable, you go and, you know, and extract one by one. In an observable, you wait for the events to come and then you just react on next, on next, on next, on next, and then on complete. Well, in order to keep it simple and to do the stuff like we used to do in Angular 1, they provided a an operator called toPromise. What it does, the toPromise converts the whole observable into one single promise. Now, in my opinion, most of the time when you work with HTTP, you don't really need observables because you get all the data at once. But if you have a real stream of data, then, you know, when you know that your data should will come in waves, you know, you get the data, then you get some more data, you get some more data, and you really want to work with it, then you can still keep it as an observable. But if what you do is you just make a request like a get to get the data and that's it, you go out of there, then you can use the toPromise and then you can just use the promise without all the complications that that the observable are bringing to the picture. And then of course, because it's a promise, then you can then it and, you know, then and then and then and then and then and then and catch and so on. So you can use all of those. And of course, if I want to use it inside my component now, because it's a promise, then I have to say then, and then I will need to initialize the data with that. So I'll add the data. I will say this dot data equals data, whatever I get from the promise. Okay. One more thing I added was the routing. The recommendation from the Angular team when you do routing is to create routing in. I'm not sure. I mean, it's not theirs to remove. I understand what you want to say. They don't offer any promises. The promises that you get here are part of the observable, the RxJS. So they did remove the observable, the promises. If we are looking at their implementation, they are not giving you any promises, you know, inside their implementation. They are only observing stuff. Okay. It's not a hack. That's actually part of the, you know, the original implementation of RxJS. It's one of the operators inside the RxJS library. But I would, you know, so they don't need to do that. So I think it's a difference between them not having to implement it and then they don't want to do it. Okay. So what I've done, I was actually adding the router module, and then the router module that includes the, you know, all the directive for routing and includes the route classes and so on. And then I create my own routing inside a separate file called app-routing. So inside my app-routing, I create an array of routes. And then this array of routes I'm using to create actually a module using something called router module for route method, so for root. So when you create the very first route, you create it with a method called for root, and then you, that's the one you are using for your own application. You use it in the module like any other dependency, you import it here, and that would make the routing available for your application. Let me go back here now and do this. I will kill this one. And I will start this one again. Just to show you the difference now, because I think this one would be loaded again. So now I get from HTTP. Instead of getting this, but I have as well two links, and I have the information here. So if I change, I don't know if you see, it changes the text, it changes the link up there to reflect actually what I'm doing. So it's done automatically. The only thing I had to do was to import the routing module in here, and then of course change a little bit my app component to include an where is it? A router outlet, this one. So router outlet is actually the placeholder that I need to put on a page where I want to show the component of a router. So now, how many of you have used the UI router in Angular? Very few. Okay. So routing was actually inspired by the work from Durandal and Aurelia. Is done by, you know, by using a component and using again a lifecycle hook. So whenever you want to go to navigate to a route, you have some stuff like can activate, can deactivate, and so on. So you, in order for you to be able to navigate from one route to another, you need to fulfill certain conditions. One of them is that if you have a can activate method, that that method should either return a resolved promise or should return true. So that was one of the things. So now, whenever you have this, so if you look at the definition of our routers, it says whenever someone uses the one router, whatever, in, I want you to render inside the outlet, the router outlet, I want you to render the one component. Whenever someone puts slash another upstairs, please, I want you to render the another component inside that router outlet. That's as simple as that. And again, if we put guards in place, so if you create your own can activate, can deactivate, and so on, if you put those guards in place, then it will know automatically that it does, you know, it needs to go through them in order to do, to actually fulfill the navigation. If any of the guards return, you know, returns a rejected promise or returns false, then it won't do the navigation. Becomes very useful. I was working for a company in a project where we actually had to implement our own lifecycle hooks, because we are using the default router inside Angular 1, where we need to put all those guards. They become very useful if you have a form, for instance, and you want to navigate away from it, then you need to actually tell the user, please don't do that because you'll lose the changes, you know. But if they go and change the link or they put something at the link, you can't, you lose that. So having this actually and making this as part of the framework makes it much easier, and it's much, you know, much much better user experience, much less work for the developer. Okay, that being said, I've showed you some stuff. This is, you know, the quick start guide, the 5 minutes quick start guide explained to you in 1.5 hour, or 1 hour and 20 minutes almost. We talked about modules, components, services, some of the out-of-the-box stuff like routing and HTTP stuff that you get, and the forms modules. the list is long. They've done a lot of work. One of the things I like a lot at the moment, and I think I'll continue to like, it's their documentation. I don't know if you've looked at it, but it's actually, it's gorgeous. They've done a lot of work. They explain a lot of stuff. They have a guide. They have actually a very, you know, everything it's explained orally. So if you look to it, you'll find a lot of good information. I really recommend actually hitting the documentation before you hit Stack Overflow. But you know, that's at the end of the day, it would be a personal choice. And with that being said, I want to thank you for tonight.